Moncrief on News Talk.
I've spent a few days hanging out in Portlaoise Station.
Yes, arrest him. I could do that all day.
I don't have what it takes to be a guard. I'm just not the law enforcement type.
Too busy. Can't go out on that dangerous drug seize thing because I'm very busy doing configuring Windows updates.
However, I've no doubt that I could help a few guards to find their funny bones.
Guards are never off. The day you're anointed by the King of the Guards down in Temple Moor, you just become a guard. Arise, young guard! Today you are no longer a person. Today you are a guard.
That's Bernard's Working Comics. It's on Mondays at 9:30 on RTE2. Or, of course, you can catch up on the RTE player. James Dempsey joins us once again. Good afternoon, James.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Before we get to Bernard's Working Comics, every time, and I mean every time, I say you can catch up on the RTE player, this causes much hilarity on Twitter in the sense that, no, you can't. Is that still the case? Is it still terrible?
So what I can say about the RTE player that drives me the most mad is they actually, I use it on an Apple TV. They have an Apple TV app. And if you just want to watch it, it's generally okay. If you want to watch live, it's a little bit tricky because sometimes there's a bit of a lag between the changes of programs. But you can ultimately create a profile. And I have created a profile and been logged out of it for months and months and months. And I finally got back in. And I favorited all these shows that I wanted to watch. And then it just sporadically forgets which ones you favorited. So it's just like, it's basically, if you just want to catch up on something that was on the night before, then it's absolutely fine. Any other functionality is kind of out the window, in my opinion.
Well, a lot of what I'm saying is that if you want to watch the adverts before Bernard's Working Comics, the RTE player is the place to go for that. Anyway, to the programme itself, and obviously we know who Bernard is. Is this kind of, let's do something with Bernard O'Shea?
Yeah, and I think when you enter this, you have to also remember that this was, they started filming this in February of 2020, and what a different world we lived in February of 2020. And my understanding is a lot of things went awry due to a pandemic that came in March. And so this obviously, I don't think, is exactly how they had intended it turning out to be. And sort of what's left is not a very satisfying program. So Bernard O'Shea is, I think, in fairness to him, a very game TV personality. He has been, I quite liked the show he did with Marty Morrissey last year where they went around raising various different bits of money for charity. Mm. I'm not the biggest fan of Bridget and Eamon, to be honest with you. But look, I think there probably is a huge amount of the Irish viewing public that does really like him. And, you know, this was set up for them. And this time around, he's going to three different kind of workplaces. So in episode one, he went to, obviously, the guards. In episode two, he went to Fota Island Wildlife Park. And I think in next week's episode, which is the last of the three, he's going to Éireannród Éire and Irish Rail. And he sort of does this kind of shtick where he's going around the job and learning all the different aspects of the various different things you kind of do on that job. And then he is befriending various people who work in this industry to ultimately try and convince them to give, you know, to do a stand-up set, basically. And I'm not sure how they originally envisaged it happening. I don't know if they intended it to be for their colleagues, you know, socially distanced. But obviously, I would say if you were to interview a real stand-up comedian, they'd say that probably doing a performance to a tiny audience that are socially distanced is probably a setup for failure to begin with. So if you're an amateur comic, it almost makes it even more difficult. But I actually will say, in fairness to the kind of the jobs bodies that they get in to do the stand-up bits, they are game for a laugh and they do their best. The problem I had with it overall is that it's actually just a bit too much Bernard, right? And the kind of interesting thing about Bernard is he's usually part of a duo, right? In everything else I've ever seen him in, he's with somebody else. And this has been his first sort of solo affair that at least I can bring to mind anyway. And it's a bit too much of him, to be honest with you. Now, I want to be as kind of nice about this as I can be. I just don't find him that funny, right? Like, I'm sure, he's been a comedian for 22 years. There are obviously many people who do find him funny, but for me, the jokes just never quite land. And then there's all these sort of interstitial bits where he's doing stand-up performances that are linking various bits. and they're clearly done in front of, you know, in front of no live audience with canned laughter played, because they're like tight close-ups of him and absolutely nothing else. And that just makes it even worse for me. But as I said, I'm sure there are plenty of viewers who found them fairly chucklesome.
Right.
On the whole, the problem is kind of, there's too much Bernard, right? To be honest with you, the more intriguing part of a show like this is the amateurs and their journey from amateur, you know, wildlife, zookeeper or Garda to the comedic stage. And we don't really get an awful lot of them. I mean, we get a bit of an insight into Bernard O'Shea's sort of comic stylings, where he does a sort of kind of like improv session with them. But other than that, I mean, his guidance is not really, like, it's somewhat lacking, to be honest with you. I mean, we don't get to see it. And that's probably almost certainly a direct result of pandemic separation, right? Furthermore, I read an interview in which he said that other comedians were supposed to be brought in, that this was going to be a far more sort of all-inclusive package of Irish comedy. And other Irish comedians were intended to be brought in to act as mentors to each of these participants. And that all fell by the wayside. So
yeah,
the fact that they even managed to, you know, cobble together a finished piece that fulfills the full brief of what they had previously filmed with the limitations of what they could do makes for an unsatisfactory but at least a finished product. And I want to like give them credit for doing that. And I really do mean that sincerely, even if it sounds really slight. I certainly, like, you know, they made the best of what they got, I thought.
Yeah. But in shows that are similar to this, somebody wants to have the perfect wedding dress, or they want to bake a cake, or they want to learn to become an interpretive dancer. There's hugging and learning and tears and all the rest of it at the end of it. In these shows, any of the people that Bernard O'Shea encounters, do they really want to become stand-up comedians, or has he just bullied them into it?
I don't know if, certainly I don't think any of them really want to be stand-up comedians, right? Because it certainly seems like some amount of arm twisting has had to go on. The kind of arm twisting that the guards would be getting trouble for, to be honest with you. But on the whole, the people that he does find are ultimately game for it without being necessarily showy, particularly amongst the guards, right? Because, not that I'm saying wildlife, you know, animal keepers are particularly showy people, but the guards have to live a very private life, right? And they don't bring an awful lot of their, you know, of their private life into the public sphere. But what's actually quite a clever hook about the show is that ultimately all the comedy is workplace comedy, right?
Yeah.
Each one of them is talking about, oh, isn't it funny when the guard does this? Or, oh, isn't it funny when the ostrich does that? Or, oh, isn't shoveling, you know, manure or more expletive than that? Isn't it funny? And all that kind of stuff. And that is absolutely ripe for the picking, right? And they're doing it for their colleagues, for whom it is a perfectly tailor-made audience, because they immediately get it. So actually that part kind of works quite cleverly, insofar as it plays up to the limitations of all of these people by giving them a friendly audience and good material, or good certainly source material, to work with. But on the whole, for me, it was just a bit too much Bernard doing shtick around the job, particularly in the guards. It was a bit more interesting when he was with the zookeepers, to be honest with you, because in that instance, there were a few wild animals who were a bit distracting. But on the whole, it just was like, it wasn't evenly handed. But as I say, in fairness, they got it over the line altogether.
Right. Okay. Right. Couple of bits of TV news. And has Netflix has removed certain programs from its service in certain countries?
Yeah, so every year Netflix releases this thing called its Environmental Social Governance Report, which covers like the amount of CO2 released into the atmosphere and basically every complaint levied against it by a national government. And this year they revealed that two countries petitioned them to remove things from the streaming service in those countries only. So Singapore, which has a very sort of infamous hardline stance on drug use and misuse, obviously, they petitioned the government, or they petitioned Netflix to remove two shows altogether, every single episode. Those shows were Cooking with Cannabis, which I think is fairly self-explanatory, and A Good Trip, Adventures in Psychedelics, which is equally self-explanatory if you are a Singaporean. The perhaps more kind of curious one is that Turkey, the Turkish government, also petitioned, and they petitioned to have a single episode of Designated Survivor removed from the entire run. Because in this episode, which I have to admit I gave up on Designated Survivor after two episodes, so I haven't seen this one, in it the Turkish president petitions Kiefer Sutherland's American president to extradite this Turkish opposition leader back to Turkey, and it bears some sort of striking similarities to the real life dispute. I think his name, well, I'm not going to pronounce this properly, but Fethullah Gulen, who is a Turkish cleric who lives in Pennsylvania and is quote unquote linked to the attempted coup there a few years ago. So they asked him to remove that, and they did. But Turkey actually has form in this, because Turkey was also on this report last year, because Netflix was going to film this TV show in Turkey, a Turkish drama, and they had to send the scripts for approval to get the license to do so, and the Turkish government refused unless they would remove a gay supporting character, and Netflix just pulled the plug altogether.
Right, okay. And do we need a stage version of Game of Thrones?
Absolutely not, right? I kind of really feel for anyone who is a Game of Thrones like book fan, because I believe there are still two novels ready to go, and you're probably just like looking at George R.R. Martin going like, hello, would you come on and get this out of the way? But instead he has signed a deal with Netflix, with HBO rather, to for the next 5 years to produce content for them. There are currently six different Game of Thrones spin-offs in development. One is definitely going ahead, but there are five others that are kind of in strong contention. But now George R.R. Martin has signed a deal to write a Broadway play and that'll also go to the West End with a premiere date in 2023. And it's going to be about, and I have to look this up, the Great Tourney at Harrenhal, which is an event obviously mentioned in the books, set 16 years before the original Game of Thrones season one kind of starting story. And it'll bring back Ned and Lyanna Stark, Jaime Lannister, Robert Baratheon, and Oberyn Martell, and will run on Broadway obviously for years and years and win all the Tonys one year, and those books are never coming out.
Right. Okay, yeah, you're right. People will queue up to talk about it. A lot of comment coming in, James, I must say. I'm agreeing with you about Bernard's working comics, and indeed about Bernard O'Shea. I won't read them out. Let's just say he's the RTE player of comedy, according to many of our listeners. Right, you are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. We have to take a break. Two more shows to talk about after this. Five 3 106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. James Dempsey is still with us. He's already been telling us about Bernard's Working Comics, which is on RTE2. That you can attempt to try and watch it on the RTE player, of course. James's verdict was, they got it made. It was probably hard. Kira says, on a completely different subject, really enjoyed Fargo season 4. I know James talked about it when it started, but now it's finished. I wonder where he'd rank it in comparison to the other series. For what it's worth, it goes 2-1-4-3 for me. Season 2 was definitely the best.
Wow. Okay. That's a very, very tricky thing to do when I haven't finished the season, so I'll have to claim, you know, asylum here on this one, because I haven't managed to get to the end, and I couldn't possibly rank them till I do.
Ah, right, okay. Bill says, when the hell is Better Call Saul coming back? I can't take the anticipation of any more.
Well, it's going to be a while. I think I read this week it's just gone into production, but one maybe bit of good news I have is they're actually planning for an animated spin-off from Better Call Saul in the future as well.
Isn't that, God, everything's going to have an animated spin-off eventually. This is Andy Warhol all over again. Elaine says, James got me into Taskmaster. It's literally the perfect pandemic TV. It's meaningless, funny, competitive nonsense. There is no further depth to it at all. I've binged watched every series since he reviewed it. Now I'm at a loss. Any chance there's another series on the way or something similar James would recommend?
Well, I wouldn't recommend the US version. There's one US series which is much maligned, even though it does include Alex Horn, but not Greg Davies. But if you sort of need a sort of like nicotine patch or something like that, maybe seek that out. But as for similar shows in that vein, off the top of my head, I'm drawing a blank. Sorry. Mm.
Could you ask your TV guy what he thinks of Ted Lasso on Apple TV? I'm loving it. And Mumford and Son singing the caption song.
So Ted Lasso is one that I haven't got to because there was a week where I was away and the guy who sat in for me did it instead. So I haven't, like I haven't got to it for that reason. And yet I see absolutely everywhere people love it, love it, love it. My brother is a huge fan, so it's definitely on my list and I can't wait to love it too.
And James was telling us about how certain countries request Netflix take out either entire series or individual episodes of series if it offends them politically or culturally of some or something like that. Graham says, I'm pretty sure Netflix removes shows depending entirely on what I want to watch. I put something on my to watch list and a big red alarm goes off in Netflix headquarters and they remove it. It's happened too often to be a coincidence. Graham, you really, really need to leave your house. We'll move on to our second show of the day. It is Invincible. New episodes every Friday on Amazon Video Prime. Here's a clip.
What if I can't do this?
Being a superhero is no different. This is the beginning of a long journey for you and me. Along the way, you're going to need to do things you don't want to do or might not think you can do. It's okay to be scared. It's natural to doubt yourself. But if you can push through that and do what needs to be done, you'll do just fine. You think you can do that, Mark?
Yeah.
Kids your age think they're invincible and it holds them back, makes them careless. The thing is, you're different. You actually are invincible.
God. Shut up, Dad, or whoever that person was. This is an animated series, James.
Yeah, so this is from Robert Kirkman, who wrote the comic book series, which ran for about 7 years. And he also wrote The Walking Dead, and he is behind this. And actually, anyone who was ever in The Walking Dead is a voice in this somewhere, because this has actually a very star-studded voice cast. The father we heard there is J.K. Simmons. The son, Mark, is Steven Yeun, who was just nominated for an Oscar this year. Then you also have Sandra Oh as Mother Debbie. But like, there are literally loads and loads and loads of famous people. Seth Rogen, Andrew Rannells, Mark Hamill, Mahershala Ali, Ezra Miller, Nicole Byer, Jonathan Groff, John Hamm, and that was an edited list because there were many more that I could have added in. So it really comes with great pedigree, and it's an intriguing concept because the episodes are kind of 45 minutes long, and it's not very often that people would, or certainly adults in the Anglo-Saxon sphere, would sit down to watch 45 minute long cartoon violence, right? And it all is, I mean, which you probably got from the clip there if you're unfamiliar with the product, is it's all superhero comics, right? And superhero stories. So, but it's all fresh heroes. This is not DC. This is not Marvel. It certainly plays with the archetypes and the tropes that we would come to expect from, like, you know, basically 60, 70 years of superheroics. But it is fresh and different in its own way. And it's basically about Mark, who is the young son of Omni-Man, and who's a sort of like Superman type character, has moved to Earth from another planet. And Mark is approaching his 18th birthday and his superpowers develop and he wants to become a superhero in his own right and becomes the eponymous Invincible. And it is 8 episodes in total. As I said, they're 45 minutes each. What is kind of striking about this is, even though it has an amazing cast, not many of them are known sort of vocal performers, right? And basically, if you are a fan of cartoons, they don't necessarily elevate the material at all, because I found a lot of the performances rather flat and plain. Furthermore, the animation isn't particularly like spectacular or interesting, really. And I found after kind of 25 minutes of an episode, or certainly the first episode, that my attention was beginning to lag. But I will say I had actually read the Invincible comics, so I knew exactly what was going to happen. So perhaps if you're entering this fresh, it'll hold your attention a bit more than it held mine. However, by kind of around the mid, or maybe the 35 minute point of the first episode, a real sort of a real dramatic twist happens that is incredibly violent. I mean, some of the most graphic violence I have ever seen on the screen in terms of visceral blood, eyeball popping madness. And certainly it pulls back your attention then. And definitely, I would say, if anyone liked The Boys, this is a companion piece to The Boys, right, where it takes superheroes that are, you know, messy and violent and angry and profane, and you're going to get a very similar kind of thing here.
Right, but The Boys had something of a sense of humor just based singularly on the clip we played. This one doesn't.
I would say there's definitely there's a lot of tongue-in-cheekedness
right
down here. Certainly, in fact, at the very beginning, it opens with this sort of action set piece about the about destroying the White House, and it really is. It's actually two security guards having this kind of conversation, one of which played by John Hamm, and it's full of lots of tongue-in-cheek humor, but. For me, it never kind of quite lands the punch in the way that sort of The Boys does. I wasn't the biggest The Boys fan, although I finally finished the first season actually this very week, and I'm getting more into it now that I'm giving it kind of full proper go. But on the whole, this I think has promise, but even though it's fresh material, there's kind of nothing you haven't seen in it before either.
Yes. Yeah, I see what you mean. Well, I suppose we'll see. Well, especially if it sounds like, and you've read the comics, so it's being very faithful to those comics.
It is being very faithful to the comics. But the very odd thing is, a live action movie was greenlit in 2017 with Seth Rogen set to adapt it. And apparently that's still going ahead. That is still being planned. And the idea is that they will exist in two different universes. There'll be a TV version. There'll be a movie version, completely separate cast. And we'll yet to see if that's going to materialize.
Right. OK. Somebody did text in about Taskmaster. The new series is actually on tonight, says one for the text looking for more. Though Mark says Taskmaster New Zealand is brilliant. If your listener needs a binge after the UK version, no Alex or Greg. But it's a great watch with fun contestants and tasks. Way better than the guff the US version was, says Mark. And Kira did text in her preferences for Fargo. She says Series 2, Series 1, Series 4, Series 3. Somebody else has texted in to say, no. The correct ranking is Series 2, Series 4, Series 1, Series 3. So there you go. This is getting a bit Star Warsy, isn't it? Right, time for our third show of the day. It is The Mighty Ducks Game Changers. New episodes every Friday on Disney+. Here's a clip.
The Ducks don't get to take hockey away from you. Stories without a few letdowns are boring. I want you to think about all the other kids who've been told that they're too small or too slow. They just want to get out there and play.
Freaks. Is he doing a trick?
Let's start our own team. Look at this. Your first teammate.
I would not be an acid physically. I have more of a podcast body.
Right, okay, fair enough. Once again, another TV show that's a spin-off from a movie of some years ago.
Yeah, 90s movie. I mean, so look, I was prime Mighty Duck material when I was a child, and we watched definitely D2, The Mighty Ducks, many, many times over in our house growing up. So this is sort of made for the nostalgia hit of my viewing millennial age. And there's only one episode so far. It came out last Friday. The next one is out tomorrow. And I have to admit, the first one is promising family viewing. But I really want to mention that this is clearly made for Disney Plus for families. Kind of the most immediate comparison would be Cobra Kai, right, where they take this kind of classic material, in that case The Karate Kid, and they update it for a modern audience. But Cobra Kai is made for adults, even though it's sort of, it's teeny in its own way, but it's clearly made for adults, and it's just like outlandishly, sillily, violently silly in its own way, right? And it is a very intriguing take on a nostalgia piece. This is a far more straight-laced take on a nostalgia piece. So this time around, Steve Brill, who wrote all of the three movies, he pitched this in 2018, and it's been green-light since then. And basically, it sees, if you're unfamiliar with The Mighty Ducks, it was a movie in the 90s in which Emilio Estevez had to do community service and train a junior hockey team, and obviously they went to great heights. And this sort of imagines what would have happened if, you know, 20-odd years later, that team had become so professional that they're basically They're like, the Dublin GAA team training at 6 a.m. in the morning. And you know, the parents are like, you know, mad parents who are paying like sports psychologists and going to expensive clinics and so on. And they are just turning out professional children players who are not allowed to be children. And Lauren Graham of Gilmore Girls plays Alex. She's a struggling single mother whose son Evan gets unceremoniously cut from the team, and she sort of goes mad and basically decides that she's going to set up a rival team. Only has 3 days to do it, and lo and behold, finds an ice rink where Gordon Bombay, played by Emilio Estevez, looking increasingly like his father, is running this rundown ice rink, but is sick of hockey, and presumably his heart of ice will melt at some point. But what I will say is, in the 45 minutes that this opening episode was, there were several very funny jokes. I chuckled my way through it, and I thought, if it was, you know, Holy Week and I was off school with my kids and I wanted to show them something that was fairly benign for all of us to watch, this would tick many, many, many of those boxes. So approach it knowing that this is made for families. It is prime family viewing, and you'll have a fairly decent time with it.
Okay, that's fair enough. You couldn't say fairer than that. James, happy Easter to you. James James Dempsey there. Three shows we were talking about were The Mighty Ducks, Game Changers. As James was just talking about that one. That's on every Friday on Disney+. Invincible, new episodes every Friday on Amazon Video Prime. That's the kind of animated superhero one. And Bernard's Working Comics. That's on Mondays at 9:30 on RT2. Or, of course, you can catch up on the RT player. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break after that. Cities on Mars.
Moncrief on News Talk.